Oh, no more mammy and no more pappy. Ain't we lucky, oh, ain't we happy? Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Sex galore, but no more marriages. No one pushing baby carriages. No one has to change a nappy. Ain't we lucky, oh, ain't we happy? Everybody's happy now. Oh, dope for tea and dope for dinner. Fun all night and love and laughter. No remorse till morning after. Where's the sin and who's the sinner? Everybody's happy now. Girls dramatic, girls exotic, girls ecstatic, girls erotic. Hug me, baby, make it snappy. Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So much cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. It's the Gnostic Media Radio Show. I'm your host, Jan Ervin. Time for another discussion of discussions about discussions. Anyway, tonight my guest is Clint Richardson. Of course, Clint has the show at 4 o'clock, and his website is realityblogger. What is it, Clint?
WordPress.com.
Yeah, that's it. Boy, my audio is sound. I'm getting a weird echo sound. I don't know what the cause of that is. Anyway, hopefully I'll make it through. But, Clint, you know, the reason why I wanted to talk to you tonight, and this has been a regular and reoccurring subject for me, is the so-called truth movement. And what is the truth movement, what it isn't? It sounds more like a bowel movement to me than a movement for truth. But every time I go out there and I scan the horizon, not every time, but all too often, I hear this term, truth movement. You're a truth movement person, truth whatever, truther, whatever this is. You know, what I am, what I consider myself as, is a primary researcher. And until I've found the primary documents, until I've dug down further and gathered all the grammar, all the who, what, where, when that I could, I don't know that information. Or at least, you know, I can't state definitively what a conclusion is. If I go so far and I know that I need to figure out A and B and figure out which one of those two is correct, I state, well, I've gotten this far and I have A or B, but until I can get down to the primary, I don't call it definitive primary truth information. And what we see out there today in this so-called truth movement is a lot of untruths, a lot of counterintelligence and intentional disinformation, a lot of groupthink, and of course group manipulating the group is one of the easiest ways to control people, and you get people into a large group. That's where we get the word democracy from, demo, mob rule. But when people are in a large group, say at a concert or at a rally or a protest or something, this large group can be easily manipulated and controlled, fooled, misled. But anyway, I wanted to have you on because you've gone through a lot of this same stuff yourself, Clint. And you wrote an article that I just finished reading last November about Confessions of a Former Truther or something like that. And so I wanted to talk to you about all of this. I'm sick of it, and I constantly am recommending to people to not take the word of people like yourself and I and to trust themselves and their own five senses to go out and look things up. If you see a citation in a book, well, by golly, Go get that citation. If you have to buy it, look it up online on Google Books, on Amazon, buy a copy of the book, whatever. You go and you check it. Then, if the quote says exactly as it was quoted, then you know that that quote is true. Then you have, okay, I know this quote in this specific instance is true. But anyway, what can you say about your own experience with the so-called truth movement and research and all of this stuff?
The only movement that is true is in your bowels. That's all I can say. The so-called truth movement. So it's a funny word, you know. And at first, I thought that truth meant something other than it did. Now, truth is truth. You know, the word in and of itself. You know, when you go in front of a court and they say, you know, do you swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth? You got to understand that you're appearing as a fiction of law. You are not appearing as yourself. You're appearing in a fictional person in front of a fictional judge. The whole thing is a fiction. And so you have this notion of okay, truth. Well, if everybody has a different truth, then the word truth itself must be sort of a flawed perspective. And if everybody's truth is in what I affectionately now call dog Latin in Black's Law 4th is defined as the Latin of illiterate persons, Latin words put together on the English grammatical system. That's what they call dog Latin. We're speaking basically a language that was specifically dumbed down, in other words, from the original Latin terms. And of course, if you look up all the terms in the law books, you're going to, and the etymology, you're going to find they come from those Latin earlier language roots. And so we speak dog Latin, which is a very very you could say it's a mind-numbing concept, because you realize most of the concepts and words that we use are very vulgar, and that's what they actually call it, the vulgar mass of illiterates, that kind of thing, when we speak in the regular language. And so I always like to compare truth to reality, because you can't really look and say, look at something in reality and say that it's true or false. You know, what exists in reality, however you want to put it, if I go into a canyon, for instance, that's never touched by a man, what I see is what I get. That's reality. Everything else is truth. And the problem with truth is that a truth in law, and this is the most important aspect of truth, a truth, according to the maxims, the principles, the very principles of law, you know, truth is described that it, basically what it says in the maxims is that black can be white if it's, as long as it's truth. You know, right can be left in truth. Right? So truth can be basically whatever you make it out to be. It's really your perception of reality that we call truth. Okay, reality is not going to change. Reality is what reality is. Most of our systems, our government systems, our languages, you know, every word we speak is at best a truth, but it's never reality. You know, it's only descriptive of reality. And so you kind of have to take yourself, in my opinion, you have to take yourself outside of the language before you can ever understand anything, and then bring the language in and do your best to accommodate the reality of the situation and try not to add your own version of truth. Now, I know that's probably a strange notion, because we're all taught, you know, to adhere to the truth, right? But you see, in law, in the legal fiction, I mean, it's right there in the word, fiction. Everything in legal is opposite to the reality. It's figurative instead of real. So it's, you know, the notion of truth, let's face it, I could be completely innocent of a crime, and if a witness insists that the truth is that I did the crime and confesses, and then another witness gets up and says the truth is he did the crime, even though I was 100 miles away from the crime, the truth stands in place of reality. Right? So the whole notion of the truth or movement, which I was a part of, is if I were to put a description on it, patently ridiculous. You know, I led We Are Change here in Utah, and I was a big active member in L.A. But after a while, you figure out that everybody in the group has a different truth. And this becomes problematic. So you start actually realizing that as a word in and of itself, the word truth actually has very little meaning.
Now, okay, so let's look at this further from the perspective of the trivium method, which obviously if we see a contradiction in something, in information, we know that it's a lie or an error. There are no contradictions in nature. There are no contradictions in that canyon. It's the tree, it's the canyon, there's a bird. There are no contradictions in nature. They only happen in the mind of man. And so we see all of these people presenting, quote-unquote, different truths, but how many have gone as far into the information as they can, and they present that information in a way that anyone and everyone can fact-check and verify for themselves that a quote or statement, etc., citation, is true?
Well, it kind of makes us dictators, doesn't it, when we when we state what the truth is and we're so positive about it? Well, then we become a dictator. The notion of how do I say this? It really is an ego killer when you realize you are part of the truth movement and yet the notion of truth is such a, it's so far removed from the aspect of anything anybody's doing. No one's actually speaking reality. They're all speaking their version of truth. So you can have four or five different truths. I mean, you take 9/11 as a perfect example. I think we might have talked about this before, but it's a relevant point. I mean, there's the plane theory. There's the no plane theory. There were bombs in the building. There were no bombs in the building. And yet these four different opinions of what truth is are placed into different documentaries that are claiming to be documenting the truth. So it gets real confusing after a while when you spend enough time in the quote-unquote truth movement, you realize no one actually has the truth, and you're sitting there debating over what truth is when, in fact, if you're calling yourself an agency of truth, well, then shouldn't you actually know what it means? What is actual truth? And what you find is that there are no groups out there that actually have it.
But it becomes an individual thing. I mean, I haven't gone out and verified these claims in these films to know. Granted, they call them truth, and counterintelligence would also call them so-called truth, but that's the point of counterintelligence in the first place, is to mislead and seed misleading information to lead people down rabbit holes and to waste time. But if we were to go out and verify, okay, what can we verify of these citations, of this no-plane theory, of this plane theory, of this missile theory, of Judy Wood's energy weapons theory, etc., and I've been accused for not being a truther and not being awake because I didn't accept Judy Wood's theory, and I felt that she didn't meet the onus of proof for her theory. And if you make large claims, you need large citations. If I claim that Timothy Leary was an agent, it's because I've gone through and painstakingly tracked the information. I've found his own admissions of being an agent. He says that he was a witting agent by 1962, etc. So I can quote Leary in his own words and say, you know, Leary, it's not my claim, Leary admits that he was an agent. But how can we get down and know that something is true? How can we get, for instance, on the same page?
Well, see, I think a big part of it is that I don't think anybody ever really reaches the point where this actually happens, but there's a certain amount of ego death that actually has to certainly happen. you have to, I think, realize Well, how do I, you know, I actually get to the point where I think there is no truth. Because
well,
everything is a changing, I should say in society, in law, in anything artificially created by man, there really is no quote-unquote truth except what the law says is truth or what the jury says is truth or what. So truth is something that it gets established as opposed to something that is proven. In other words, through scientific methods, we find reality, right? We understand notions like, these are disputed things, some of them, but, you know, let's just say gravity as an example, right? We can physically understand the notion of it. Probably a bad example, but it's just... My favorite way to look at this is, of course, The Matrix, right? And I've been studying... just pretty much nonstop writing this book, and one of the things I'm really covering is the three books, specifically the one book that the Matrix was basically a plagiarization from. One of those books is called Simulacrum and Simulation. It was by a French author in the 1980s, and he was a university professor, and he wrote this incredible, incredible work that's virtually impossible to read because it's almost impossible to contemplate what this guy is saying. But when you do get it, when you understand what the Matrix movie was copying, plagiarizingly, quite poorly, actually, because I always... viewed the movie itself, you know, one of my favorite movies and all that, and then I realized it was just a ridiculous plagiarization of this guy's work, also of the guy who started Wired magazine. He wrote a book called Out of Control on systems, and like Beehive is a system, and then there's another book on psychology. I can't think of the name, but. I was so interested in understanding the nature of what this movie was trying to get across or hiding from everybody, putting forward false truths, if you will, that I went frame by frame, and I found this book. It's a hollowed out book in the movie. It's titled Simulacrum and Simulation. It's where the character Neo, which is an anagram for what was it, one, I think. It's where he keeps his money and his disk information. The guy comes to his door, gives him money. He goes into this hollowed out book called Simulacrum and Simulation and retrieves the disk, which is another artificial information, and he exchanged one artifice for another, one simulacrum for one simulation. And when you get into this book, and I've probably read it 10 times by now, trying to expose it and explain how it applies to the reality of what that movie was putting forward in a hidden way, of course. When you actually can grasp what that book is saying, let me just read you a quote from Ecclesiastes, and this is one of the first quotes that's in the book. And nobody, including myself, understands this quote until you actually figure it out by absolute incredible contemplation. But it says, the simulacrum is never what hides the truth. It is truth that hides the fact that there is none, meaning there is no truth. The simulacrum is truth. So let me read that again. This is Ecclesiastes. The simulacrum is never what hides the truth. It is truth that hides the fact that there is none. The simulacrum is true.
So, now, are you arguing that you can't know anything for certain?
Well, my argument, as well as Jean Baudrillard, who wrote this book that the Matrix movie was based on, is basically that everything is in a simulation or a simulacrum. Now, I couldn't figure out what a simulacrum was. A simulacrum is a copy without an original.
Right. All right. We'll be back in a moment. back. So, you know, I wanted to touch on a couple things here, and I think it's important for people to understand and to especially differentiate between the truth and specific point-by-point instances of truth. A lot of people, I hear a lot of time, well, there is no the truth. There is, you know, and we have to then ask ourselves, well, how do you know there is no truth? How do you know that's true? And, you know, because it's making a declarative statement that there is no truth. But the truth, what I hear a lot of people do is they say, well, you can't know the truth. Well, what is the truth? You mean the foundations of all life, the creation of the universe, and, you know, did we come from amoebas or space beings or gods or, you know, whatever. That's a separate issue. And this is often a tactic used to get people to not look at all. But if we focus on specific instances, like I have a citation, you know, I'm just giving an example. I have Black's Law in front of me, Black's Law, 5th edition, and I pull it out open and I look up the definition of law, and I can say, this is what Black's Law, 5th edition says. You can go to your copy of Black's Law, 5th edition, and you can look up the word law, and you can say, yes, my claim that that's what Black's Law says is true. This specific instance on a case-by-case, point-by-point basis. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. I mean, if I were to define it according to the law, and see, we have to realize that the law itself is not reality. It's all
right.
Fiction. It's all a lie, but it's a confirmed lie. And if you look up the word confirmation, that's a very important word. Truth, there's three conceptions as to what constitutes truth. Agreement of thought and reality, right? So if we we see a rock and we both agree, you see, I guess I'll put it to you this way, Jan. If you were the last man on Earth, then there would be no need for truth. I mean, the truth, it takes at least two people. Reality never is going to change, but your perception of reality is truth. And that's the hard part, I think, for people to grasp, is the notion that you can perceive reality, that which is despite your existence. The fact that you can actually perceive reality in a different way is as something other than it actually is, that's truth. Okay, because we believe what we believe. So truth can at best only be a belief in what reality is. That's the trick of it all. And so when you look up truth, especially in the legal dictionaries, you find all kinds of crazy crap. You know, what is truth? It's, you know, the simulation is the truth, the lie is the truth. And that's where confirmation comes into play. To confirm a lie in the legal realm, because legal means artificial, to confirm a lie is to tell the truth. It gets really, really convoluted and confusing after a while until you get on top of it and you master it and you say, well, everything, first of all, is a lie. That is a legal concept because it's a figurative, always a figurative thing. Even the word person is not referring to life. Even the word life is not referring to actual life. It's so all these words are just absolutely nuts until you figure out, oh, okay, they're all figurative. They don't mean the actual reality of things. So they are a truth that is confirmed by many or more than one person, right? But even the word person is an artifice. So it's like, it's mind-boggling until you get to the point where you just kind of hit one day and you realize that truth is whatever. Truth depends on the art that you're participating in. There's the legal art, the medical art, there's reality, there's truth, you know, there's the medical art, there's biology, and each set of you know, each art form has its own language, and it's very difficult to distinguish between the art and the reality. Because the art needs to be described by words that represent the truth of the art, but art is just short for artificial or artifice. Right? So it gets really convoluted once you really start exploring the whole possibilities of how lies are truth in the legal realm.
Be right back. What I want to touch on for a moment before we go further is, you know, this whole Kantian irrationality. And we have to be careful of Immanuel Kant. And I've interviewed, for instance, David Harriman on my show back in 2011 regarding this whole thing about truth. And Kant and the irrationalists basically argued that because everything is based on perception, reality doesn't exist, essentially. We can't know anything for certain. And I disagree with that. I think we can know specific instances for certain. That's what the trivium method is for, that both you and I utilize so much. But the, you know, things like quantum physics want us to believe that we can't know anything at all, that everything is in this quantum sort of Roger Rabbit land.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, we shouldn't trust our own five senses. We should just appeal to whatever authority. And the idea of truth and reality, etc., is completely attacked by the so-called New Age movement, which is wrapped up into quantum physics, etc. But they all say, well, there is no truth. Again, this is an axiom. It's a statement of fact. Okay, so there is no truth. Well, aren't you stating that as a truth? So if there is no truth, how can you state there is no truth as a truth? And, you know, so we have to, again, go back and, well, and look at each of these things on a case-by-case, point-by-point basis. But
the easiest way for myself to understand it is I just eventually said, okay, so ultimately, truth is my personal simulation of reality. And everybody has a different simulation, all right? Truth is only at best a simulation or a description of reality. That's the best it can be, because truth is a concept of the mind. Reality exists outside of the mind. It doesn't need me to acknowledge that it is reality, whereas truth is something you put your hand up and say, I swear to tell the truth. Right? So these are two different concepts, and that's an important aspect. Now, Philip K. Dick, this is his quote. I didn't actually get the source of this quote, but he said the basic tool for the manipulation of reality is the manipulation of words. If you can control the meaning of words, you can control the people who must use them. And that is the perfect quote for exactly every single one of our own personal dispositions. We are under a system where the words, a legal system, where the words are specifically defined as something quite opposite of the words we generally use that sound exactly the same. If you control the meaning of words, you can control the people who must use them. We're required to use certain words which are made into a truth. Now, again, the notion of truth, only truth can happen when it's completely a known falsity. It can become truth as long as you and I, Jan, agree that we're going to have a society built on a lie. That becomes our truth. We can say that it is true that the lie is the law. Okay,
well, sure.
Does that make it reality? Does that make the law itself a reality?
But the law is a fiction, as you just admitted, but
yeah.
We agree, it would be true that we agreed to create this lie for law.
Right.
You see
right.
What I'm saying? But we have to be careful. Obviously, legal fiction and legal truth is one thing, but you and I walking outside and looking at a tree we can look at the tree and say, it's a tree. Nature has no contradictions. It has no lies. It just is. But, you know, like Aldous Huxley, for instance, in his Doors of Perception, I think it was, he wanted everybody to believe that the five senses were a filtering out of reality rather than how we perceive reality in the first place. You know, in other words, garbage in, garbage out. But what he wanted people to think is we shouldn't perceive at all. We should just turn everything off, not have any information coming in because, oh, that's a filter so because you can't perceive anything. No, it's how we get information from reality. But it's up to us the level of grammar that we dig down to, and when we do that grammar and we take in all of that grammar, we should be able to provide a path for anyone else, and this is where you're going to say, well, that's consensus, but anyone else should be able to go step by step through that information and verify each and every point. And if there is a contradiction, then it's an error or a lie or an untruth.
Well, for me, it's easiest to understand the difference between these two concepts is the human equation, if you will. Reality, you know, if mankind never walked the face of this earth, reality would be exactly what it is without man. Okay? What's that?
How would you know?
Well, truth then would be a creation of man, because it can only be at best our perception of reality, and it can only be at best what we agree on as far as things we don't understand. And so you have these ridiculous scientific consensus types of things, which are then the government truths.
That's a consensus, though, but this is them, instead of ruling on the facts and the grammar, what they're doing is they're taking a vote. This is true. I mean, they're two different things, you know. It's what you and I can verify and look at. Anybody, if we place something into the commons, I'm holding a coffee cup, you can hear it. It's my Contigo, actually. But, you know, if we were on camera, you could see it. That would be two-sense reality. And if you were here, you know, we would have three-dimensional reality to verify it, look it up, hold it, taste it, touch it. Yeah, you know, there's coffee in there, too, etc. But each person should be able to go through and verify the same information. Now, this is being consistent with reality. To me, that's what truth is consistency with reality. It's not taking a vote. It's not saying, oh, well, you know, can't you guys get along left and right? You know, it's like you can have truth of the facts and research and information on one side, and someone comes along and creates a dichotomy of the exact opposite, and then a politician comes along. Well, you know, can't we all just agree and get along? I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. Well, no, the truth is on one side, a lie is on another. And then if we come to this consensus, yeah, well, we can just agree to get along. Well, we're agreeing with a half-truth, which is actually a lie.
Well, you know, go back to... That's, how do I explain this? This is one of those concepts that I kind of figured out along the way. It's kind of like pro and con. Pro and con are not reality and non-reality. Pro and con is one opinion versus another opinion. So pro and con cannot be confused with what is the reality of whatever pro and con opinion or side you're on. And
thesis, that's antithesis synthesis.
Yeah, so truth falls somewhere in that notion of pro or con. If I don't like the truth, I'm going to do everything I can to avoid the truth. But I can't avoid reality. I can build upon top of it.
But
truth can become something other than reality. Like I can ignore the pollution by building a bubble.
But isn't that's when it becomes a belief and not truth? I mean, granted, there's the legal opinion, whatever consensus they're going to say is true. But again, if it's not consistent with reality via the trivium method anyway, then it's not true. I mean, then it becomes a belief system. But the trivium method is to stay consistent with reality, and it acts as a corkscrew so that when new information comes in, we can constantly go back and review. We've done all that grammar. We've processed our fallacies. If someone finds new grammar that throws off, we can look and say, hey, did I miss a piece of grammar? No, it's false grammar, and we can toss it out. We can look at it and verify it.
There's also the sense, though, that you can get, you can take the trivium, actually, or other systems like that of verification too far. Because remember, the basic tool for manipulation of reality is the manipulation of words. We are already speaking a very purposefully tainted language, which we call English. In other words, dog Latin, that of which the mass of illiterates speaks, while the judges and the courts and all these people are still speaking and understanding the Latin, the true Latin meaning of words. So we are already at a disadvantage when it comes to the trivium and applying it correctly, because our language is already flawed.
But part of the trivium, and this is discussed in the Gino Denning shows, is learning Latin and Greek and all of this stuff. So that we can get back. I mean, it's actually included in part of the trivium, so that we can get back to the basic formations of words and understand them and how they're being used. So the trivium does, in fact, cover that. Do you want to take a call?
We certainly can.
All right, let's go to Tyler in Utah.
Utah?
Utah.
What? That hellhole?
Hey, that hellhole, right? How's it going, Clint and Sons?
Good.
You're in Utah.
Yeah, and I have reception where I'm at right now. I'm sorry about that.
So what did you want to add to the discussion here, Tyler?
Well, last time Clint was on the show, and Clint, I like your work.
You're cutting out.
Doing a really good job there. But I wanted to ask a question about Clint. You was yes or no? That is kind of what Jan's getting at. Is truth discoverable in reality? And is there such a thing as truth in reality? Not anyone's perception of it, or is it not there?
If I got you're breaking up a little bit, but if I got the question correct, I suppose you could say that every once in a while, people's perception of what is reality and their own personal truth about reality sort of collide and actually appear to be the same. But the notion, after understanding and really getting into the Bible and its true intention, its true meanings of all the, you know, going through the concordances and really studying the Bible, the tree of knowledge is actually a reference to, essentially knowledge being sort of a bad word.
This is what you did to Jan a minute ago. You went on a long story about the Matrix and whatnot. I don't like to be, but it's either the truth exists in reality or not. And otherwise, you're claiming that. See, my definition of truth would be that which exists, or that which has undergone the formality of actually occurring, and then that would be the truth. So the sun came up this morning. That's a true statement, and I can, put everything I know that the sun came up this morning, and that's true.
What if I'm blind?
It's not my perception of that.
And well, you would still be able to feel the heat from the sun.
I know it's the sun.
You could go outside, suppose. But
it's almost like you're saying that you're a solipsist, that the truth is up to what you decided.
Right. And we do have to be careful of solipsism and falling for the trap of Kantian sophism.
I'm trying to say the opposite, actually.
Yeah, that's a slippery slope.
I'm trying to tell you the opposite, actually.
So this happened last time you guys were on, that young show. You were saying the truth is not really something that can be discovered, that it's up to each person to decide what that is. And then Jan was, not sure if he didn't hear you correctly, but he at the end of the show kind of said, anyone who thinks that way is kind of, lost and confused, because truth is definitely discoverable in reality. And it almost seems like this new show is Jan's way of kind of not out a little bit
You're cutting out really badly. You're going to have to repeat yourself.
Okay. Well, I won't make it a problem, but basically, just again, Clint, are you saying that the truth is subjective, or is it objective and exists in reality, or is it subjective and exists up to what each person decides?
If I got that question, and again, you're breaking up, is truth subjective or objective? Is that the question?
Yes, yes.
Well, I would probably say subjective, because truth is your perception of reality.
I would say objective, because two people should be able to come and approach a citation, a tree, a bird, a whatever, and look at it and verify each of us in the commons that we can agree and perceive through our senses these things. But if we're saying that, you know, okay, so our five senses are just filters, like Aldous Huxley and Kant and everybody else want us to think, then my feeling is that, or my perception of reality is that we're falling into their trap, and therefore, I mean, it leaves us in the state of hopelessness. And hey, you know, we may as well just give up and give into them. We can't know anything. We shouldn't bother looking. We shouldn't look anything up. We shouldn't check the citation, and that's what they want.
The basic, I don't know what word to use here, but the notion that truth is only the perception of reality, you know, however that truth is presented to you, if it's the Huxleyan truth, or if it's the biblical truth, or if it's the satanic truth, or whatever truth,
what you're doing is you're using belief systems. Okay,
right.
Now what I'm saying truth is something that you and I can both verify, an objective reality. What you're saying is, well, the Christians say, you know, popularly speaking, our belief is true. The Muslims say our belief is true. This is not something that each of us can go into reality and verify. If I whack you in the head with a rock, and, you know, you can see the rock. You can see the rock coming at you. You can duck out of the way of the rock. And if the rock hits you, you know, hey, that was a rock. You don't think, well, you know, this was subjective. It was, you know, it's just my thoughts on reality.
I'll put it to you this way. Maybe this is, you know, because this is a really difficult subject to put into words.
Not
because
really.
Words, as Philip K. Dick just said, the basic tool for manipulation of reality is the manipulation of words. So trying to discuss this in dog Latin is actually very difficult. The notion, I guess the best way to say this is that if there was no presence of man on earth, there would be no truth. There would only be the reality. Man comes along, develops a bunch of cultural notions and truths, and he does experiments with reality, different elements of the earth, and he comes up with a truth. Generally, his truths are either incomplete or dead wrong, and someone else comes along and provides a better truth, and a better truth, and a better truth, until finally the truth meets up with reality. So,
all right, and we'll
can't compare the two as the same.
We'll be right back, and we're looking at two different things. We're looking at lesser and greater issues. All right, so Clint and I were discussing off air, and I was giving the example of a tree. Okay, the concept of the word tree is something that exists outside of reality in our minds, and we can have a cedar tree, a pine tree, an oak tree, a weeping willow tree, etc. And the concept of tree, though, when we say tree, we know this. Now, there are, we can go with the greater the truth generalization. Okay, well, you know, there are so many different variables for tree that we can't know. Or we can walk outside into reality and discuss a specific tree and verify in reality the aspects of this specific tree. This is why I continually say that truth deals with a case-by-case, point-by-point basis. Now, that, you know, table is another concept. We have the concept of table in our minds. When I say the word table, we all think of a table. Each of us may see a different table in our own minds, but when we walk up to a table, we know it's a table. We know we can sit down at a table. You know, it might be a picnic table. It might be a king's dinner table. It might be, you know, a fold-out card table, etc. But each, you know, there are all of these different ideas of table, but when we walk up to a specific table, you and I can look at a card table and say, well, this is a card table. It has legs. It folds. We can define the words that we're using so that we can know what do folding mean? What do the legs mean? What, you know, et cetera. So we have to be careful from going from the concept of tree, and there's all of these different variances of tree out in nature, to what is this specific tree and how do we define its attributes.
This is what's interesting about this type of conversation, because this is how the whole legal system actually applies, is we are supposed to acknowledge and admit that we are a person. A person is a status of something, but not the actual thing. So we are always conditioned and trained to say, yes, I am, for instance, I am Clint Richardson, which is just a couple of words that have no meaning whatsoever unless I agree that it is true, not reality, just true, that I am Clint Richardson. I'm not Clint Richardson. I'm a bag of water, mostly water, and, you know, so it's interesting, Jan, because one of the things...
Well, what you're
really
doing, though, is you're going from, descriptions... now I'm forgetting the word, but over to attributes. So,
but can
you know,
we
yes,
agree?
But we can agree that Clint is a man. Now, if you want to go into different attributes, okay, what is Clint made out of? That's a totally different subject. Yes, you're water. Yes, you're all of this. But what that all of that composes is Clint. Now, whether or not you want to use the legal name Richardson versus your given name by your family, Clint. But
here's
what you're doing is you're confusing attributes with,
here's the difference. Here's the difference, John. Would I exist in reality if my name was not Clint Richardson? Is it true that my name is Clint Richardson? Sure. Does it make my reality of existence? Absolutely not.
Okay, so let's say we call you Larry, for instance, okay? But Larry as the person is still on here, is still talking. In reality, we know Larry Clint, whatever you want to call yourself, exists. Reality exists because if reality didn't exist, we couldn't have this discussion about reality. Why don't we take another caller? And actually, we've only got a minute left to the next break, so we'll take a caller or two after the next break here. But, you know, and we got way off topic because we were supposed to be talking about the truth movement, and here we're arguing over truth and axioms. And to me, it sounds like you're arguing from Kant's point of view. And again, we have to be very careful of Kant and Hegel and these guys because they are the ones who sowed all of this stuff to get people to not study things. But I'll let you answer that when we get back.
Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So much cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more thinking. So, so happy.
You know, and one of the things I was just, you know, and I can't think of the other word. You know, it's just, I thought about it 1,000 times over the last couple of weeks. But attributes versus whatever. Anyway, now, you know, and we have to be careful of confusing these two things. It's like you might like chicken and I don't like chicken, but it doesn't mean that we're not both eating chicken, you know, because, you know, qualities, was it quality versus attributes? Anyway, I'll have to look that up and do a follow-up on that. Did you want to respond to what I said before the break, before we go to the next caller?
Well, see, I suppose that the best way to distinguish between reality and truth is that one needs words to describe it, and one exists despite any words or concepts that man can come up with and create. So reality is going to be there regardless of what the hell we think, and truth is going to be the perceptions that we have of that reality as we write them down. You say chicken, but that's just a word. We don't eat chicken. We eat a reality that we call chicken. Chicken is our truth. It's the word we use to describe something.
Well, and this is why we define words and agree to their definitions in the first place. Otherwise, we just go all over the place and don't
right.
get
well, see, here's
anywhere.
The problem.
Then we can't even communicate. So,
let's see, the
I mean, granted,
is.
there's the magi and the legalese and those who fiddle with language, but you and I, having a specific discussion, can agree to the definitions and have a logical point-by-point conversation. We can look at evidence. We can agree to it. You know, and it, okay, so, you know, here's the issue. What you're saying basically is, okay, well, since it's all perception, then we can't know anything, then why even bother? Why live? Why anything?
Well, that's a fallacious, I don't know what that's an appeal to, but that's a fallacy in and of
itself.
Well,
that's what I'm hearing you saying. If you say, you know, there is no truth, then how do you even, you know, how can you substantiate that axiom? Because it's a statement of truth in and of itself, so it's self-contradictory.
Well, it's not that there isn't truth. Obviously, wars are started over truth. So we can't say there is no truth. What I'm saying is that truth doesn't necessarily attach itself to reality. Truth are concepts from the tree of knowledge, this type of thing. These are all, you know, religions are truths. They're not realities. Things that are ideas are truths when they're proven. But are they the reality, right? Because maybe that combination of elements that you use to prove the truth that this element and this element makes this compound would actually never happen in nature. So it's an artificial construct of human intervention into reality. So again, I enjoy talking about this. The only point I'm trying to make is that truth can be a lie, but reality cannot. Reality exists despite any truth or concept.
Okay, but you're using but what you're doing is you're using a legal definition of what truth can be. To me, truth is consistent with reality, period. It's not based on some consensus by a jury or whatever, a judge saying that a lie is truth. Truth is consistent with reality. Granted, Black's Law Dictionary and a court would have a different definition of quote-unquote truth. But what I'm saying is that, you know, and you and I have discussed this often in the past, the common language, what you and I or what most people understand the word truth to be is consistency with reality, not taking a lie and calling it truth and then saying that's truth.
Which is exactly what we do in our culture. We live basically a bunch of lies from our name to our persona and everything else. The notion, though, how do I say this? We live on our truth. Let's just take an example. Our truth, our perception, in other words, of reality, which we call truth. Our perception of reality is that the earth is round. We inhabit a very infinitesimal part of, but we have the notion that the earth is a mantle and a crust and it's circular and has a center and but that is our truth. That truth does not necessarily itself as part of reality. It is our perception of reality.
But again, this is what we are told. You and I haven't personally verified all of this.
Exactly.
Okay, but we have to. Again, you know, this is going from the concept of the truth, this big grand concept of truth, down to specific instances. 1 + 1 = 2. If I have one apple plus one apple, I have two apples. We can verify these things as true. Let's take another caller. Why don't we go to Paul in Alabama? Paul, are you there?
Paul, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I think so. You threw me off there. you guys still there?
Yep.
Okay.
What did you? Go ahead.
Oversimplistic example. So, say back to the example they gave earlier. You have two guys standing there gazing at a tree. They both agree that it's a tree. Okay. Now. 1,000 years later, the powers that be have bred out of the public mind the notion that that object is called a tree, which it really is, and that it's now called lumber, and as far as we know, it's always been called lumber. Now, the first two cats, they were actually believing a truth. The second two cats, they're believing of what they believe or have been told as being the truth, but it actually has not been proven. Actually, it ends up being proven that it's not the truth. So I say that I think the word truth itself has been attacked. I think there is truth.
Well, I would agree with you.
Absolute, eternal, universal maxim of truth versus a lie or non-truth. How about that?
I would agree with you, and here's one issue though. Okay, with the issue lumber, even if you and I, even if they change the word they, whoever they are, even if they change the word tree to lumber or gobbledygook, it doesn't matter because you and I could look at this gobbledygook and agree, yes, this is a gobbledygook. And so even, you know, the importance here though is defining and understanding our terms. First, on what tree, lumber, gobbledygook, etc. is, and you know, and breaking it down specifically. But we also have to be careful to argue that there is no truth, because I think, you know, again, you know, it's that is a statement of fact or of truth that there is no truth. So it's self-contradictory, but
no,
it opens
just,
up a whole.
Point.
What's that?
That's not my point. That's not my point. My point was, in fact, that the second example are two cats that have used all their powers of perception. They've done all the research, and it is, in fact, with all the indications, because all the history books have been erased or whatever, they are believing a lie while believing that it's the truth. It is
well,
not lumber.
But again, if you and I are looking at that tree, though, it doesn't matter what we're calling it. If you and I agree to the term that we're calling it, we can still have a fact-based, logical conversation based in reality.
Oh, well, yeah, we can. We can. But
that
it's still not a tree. It's not lumber, though. It's tree. It's a tree. And we've been deluded. We've been deceived or whatever. And that's what I'm saying that's going on about the word truth itself. Truth, the meaning of truth has been apparently corrupted and messed with, because to me it has always been a universal, forever, eternal maxim of truth, and it cannot be violated. And when it is, it's called a lie.
This is where you have to go into sort of the biblical, or for that matter, any other type of story where there's good versus evil. Right? However you want to define that, I don't care, I don't want to get all religious, etc.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, if let's just use the biblical terms. If Satan, which is the king of lies, says that something is true, is it?
No, it's the exact opposite. Oh, I see what you mean. Well, I mean the way we're supposed to perceive it is that he says light is dark and everything good is bad. So if he says something
right.
is true, it's a lie, but you're adding another layer on top of that.
Well, the only way that you can decipher that mathematical equation is to look at what reality is, despite the truth that's being told about it. Because if a liar is telling the truth, see, that's the thing. You can't alter reality by telling a lie about it, but you can alter the truth about something, and you can convince an entire population that the truth is a lie, that the lie is the truth. But you can never actually change reality.
Then the truth becomes a lie. Then the truth is no longer truth. It is now.
Exactly. As soon as the truth strays away from being consistent with reality, then it's a lie.
So then we must say that reality is, it should not be accorded or spoken of as a truth or a falsity, because it exists despite our contemplations, our labels, whether we say it's true or not. It's there regardless of our opinions. That's why I say truth is merely the perception of reality.
Well, truth can be indeed manipulated, and then again, it's no longer truth, though. Truth is still going to stand on its own. One plus one, you know, one apple plus one apple is still going to be two apples, no matter how much someone lies and manipulates it and tries to mislead us to some sophist understanding of it, truth is still going to be there of those facts. So regardless if someone makes up a lie and calls it truth, the truth still exists outside of those lies in reality.
I say reality exists despite the, any truth that you perceive about reality, but...
I say reality and truth are the same, Clint, and I highly respect you, but I think your premise is faulty.
All right.
I do.
I think we have to be careful of the, you know, the fallacy of the stolen concept as well. So let's take... another guy. We have a whole lot of callers waiting. Paul, thank you so much. What's that?
Let's do them.
Yeah, let's go to the next caller. Let's go to Frederick in Michigan.
By the way, this doesn't have to be like an all-out brawl. You don't have to take one side or the other. We're simply philosophizing here. That's all.
Fred, you there?
Aspiring, aspiring philosophers.
Fred, it's been a week or two. How are you doing, man?
Hey, okay. You know, tonight, finally, fellas, it's been 7 to 8 years. Let's see, September 07th, when I kind of wasn't able to walk very far, and incessant pain, relentless, incessant, debilitating pain. And
is that true?
finally connected with some marvelous people in old Canada, British Columbia, old Canada. And these dear sweet ladies sent me some what they call salves. I always thought it was salve, but salves. And I'm pain free. I actually got out into the neighborhood this evening. That's why I missed calling into Clint's broadcast. I actually got out for an hour and a half and connected with people I hadn't seen in quite a long time.
I'm glad to hear that, man.
That. Still pain-free, man. So,
I spent 15 years in and out of hospitals. I know what that's like.
Yeah. Not a good place to be, and Robert Mendelsohn coined the term medical concentration center with the exception of emergency trauma centers, and I totally agree with that.
And Lark has personally attested to that.
I'm glad you brought that up, bro, because normally Lark and I would be connecting on a weekly basis. What's his status?
Well, he was on the show last Monday from his hospital bed. I haven't heard from him this week. I suppose I should probably check in on him. I meant to do that yesterday. I've just been busy. Lark, if you're in the chat room there, why don't you say hi so we know you're still alive?
Yeah, in fact, what you fellows, you aspiring philosophers are describing, I would wager Lark might describe as communitarianism, because those folks and their communitarian philosophy, logic, concepts seem to have hijacked the instinctual innate knowledge and wisdom that is everyone's birthright, everyone's inheritance from our creator, Yahweh. And so, you know, Deuteronomy 30:19, I want to bring this into focus because I was raised Roman Catholic, right? And didn't know, I knew a Bible was some sort of a reference of historic events, and that was it. And then I was watching Cosmos, and this guy Patrick Stewart, at the very beginning of this episode, he says this: "Behold, I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day that I have set before thee life and death, the blessing and the curse. Therefore, choose life, that thou mayest live, thou and thy seed." And that smacked me as sounding rather biblical. And so finally I crack open a veteran's Bible, and there it is, Deuteronomy 30:19. So I'm thinking, okay, free will, the free will choice. Okay, so I have to discover the truth. And as you described, Jan, in fact, I called Coast to Coast several months ago. There was a, quote, New Age scientist guy, very mild-mannered, but he declared repeatedly, there are no absolutes, everything's relative, etc. So I called in, and I told the call screener, Gina, that I wanted to challenge this guy regarding his declarations of absolute certainty or truth that there are no absolutes. She asked what I meant, and I said, okay, I would like to tell this guy, next time he's in New York City, go up on top of the, I don't know, the Empire State Building, right?
Here's the irony, Fred, here's the irony even of his statement. If there are no, you know, grand statements of truth, then how can he even make that statement?
True. And I was going to get into that, but I wanted to hit hard with, okay, fine, prove it. Go jump off a building and fly away like a falcon.
Well, you know, and as a parent myself, when a child is growing up, you can see the child, you know, as they learn to see things in reality. You put a ball in front of them, they're rolling it back and forth, they push it, they start to realize cause and effect, they start to laugh, and, oh, look, I can push this, I can have an effect on this thing in reality. And then essentially, you know, what the Kantians, with Kantians, noumena, et cetera, want us to believe is that, you know, and it's basically a stolen concept fallacy, but we can't know these things. We can't trust our own five senses. They're actually filters. They're not how we gather information from reality. They're filtering out information from reality. So therefore, we should just turn off all of our senses. We could just cut off our hands, cut out our eyes, cut off our ears, you know, plug our noses, etc., and that this would be a pure state somehow. But, you know, it's like, okay, so basically, you know, like Jiddu Krishnamurti selling all this, you know, knowledge seems so utterly nonsense to me. But knowledge is asking who, what, where, and when. And if we're focused on each specific instance, we can find truth. Again, you know, the trick is when we go from a specific instance to this grand concept of the truth. And I think that's a bait and switch or a, you know, et cetera, you know. But anyway, we'll take another caller after the break here.
Every group wants to declare their own truth. That's the point.
But if it's not consistent with reality, it's still not true.
Exactly.
All right, we're back. We were just continuing the discussion off air, but why don't we jump into another call? We got a bunch of people waiting online. You ready for another one, Clint?
Sure thing.
All right, let's go to Dan in Washington.
Hi, gentlemen. I'm so ingrained in the topic of tonight, and it's interesting as I wait to get on the air with you, all the concepts that run through my head. So,
hopefully you wrote them all down.
you know, that's a great idea. I want to, in as much as possible, I'd love to shove a mega pill of the concepts your way, and yet I honestly feel that there's nothing that I have to impart which would bring anything new. It would simply be a distillation or a distillation of all of the concepts that you both have been working on over such a long period of time. And and especially Clint, you with your etymology, Jan with you and Trivium, both critical as far as logical approaches to the distillation understanding. And I believe that there's a word that you both have not brought up yet tonight. I've heard it in another program, but it's the same to me regardless, and that is the immutable truths. And as an example, we might find in physics that there are examples of immutable truths, things which simply can't change regardless of how we might, you know, they simply cannot be manipulated. But then there are conceptual truths, and the first example of which I might say that every apple is a good apple because I simply have not happened to experience a rotten apple, and yet you might know differently, and that would
the,
be
the black goose situation.
That's because you don't know Jan personally.
Well, then I.
he's a bad apple.
Don't call me the bad apple. I'll start calling you the bad apple. I am not. Why are we, you know, and we shouldn't even be using apples with all the damn, excuse me, Garden of Eden and the apple and fallen tree and all this stuff. We should probably find a better example to use so that no one can fall prey to a tactic like bad apple.
Gentlemen, I don't think we're talking about science here. I think we're talking about politics, by and large, as it affects our lives. And those would be conceptual and subject to interpretation, terms of art, and the, because honestly, we could be green cheese on the moon, and that would be a different system of things, but we have the system that we have. And in discerning the transitions from what I at least, by and large, believe to be organic declarations or instruments of our political relations and the transitions which have changed over the years. My initial approach had to do with both etymology, that is, the original definitions, as well as the promulgation of authority. And it seemed through those two processes that we might be able to discern the ultimate wisdom or life of the ordinances which affect and control our lives. I recall in a program by Clint, maybe in the last month or two, that what is the bottom line? And it seems that our personal truths or our personal faith and strength were all that we really could rely upon, because we cannot, or it's unlikely that we would be able to organize into such a movement that we would be able to overturn the processes that affect us so intensely in our system of existence. And Clint, I also remember that you stated maybe 2 months ago that a certain perspective that you had on people who were poetic versus the other type of individual who I can't remember at this point, but I'm going to shove on you if you'll allow me my poem.
But you're gonna have to hold on, Dan, because we got the bumper music there, so we'll be right back.
No more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now. Love and laughter. No remorse the morning after. Where's the sin and who's the sinner? Everybody's happy.
And we're back. Dan, I wanted to give you a chance to finish what you were saying before Clint wants to read a definition here. But why don't you start off, Dan?
All right. It is, of course, I wish dearly that we could unite our differences with at least some common denominator that we could unite our differences with at least an appreciation for the various perspectives that we impart from our life experiences. But if I cannot if I cannot prevail or encourage all of us to unite in one understanding, which quite frankly, what makes my, you know, poop smell better than anybody else's. And yet, I can't depart. I have two concepts I want to share with you before, Clint. I want you to step in at the end. First of all, I want to say that I have the utmost of respect for both of you, and I appreciate you so much for the stimulation and the intelligence that you bring to the discussion in each of our explorations for a greater understanding of life. But I want also to share, lastly, from my political studies of 20 years and early on, I wrote this. I lived 20 years along an ocean beach in the Pacific and saw enough metaphor from the ocean and the beach to write this poem about truth, because I had to deal with it. This was motivated from a political standpoint. It's called A Grain of Truth. There's a grain of truth on the beach of thought, weaving in and out of aught. Opinion waves an even spread, which cast the grain along life's threads. For as some push and others pull, yet others in between. The plot, of course, desired is impossible, if rarely seen. A mass of minds ingrained in time, a wash of to and fro, caring not if seen or blind, as long as there's a place to go, which is, of course, quite easy. The beach accepts all kinds, yet still is so amazing that all these grains don't share one mind, but move in for position, as if to be on top. A funny disposition, Clint, on plain of beach, a hill it's not. And who is in control? For then could it be grain? If not, then maybe wash of wave, or downpour of the falling rain? Or planet Earth, a grain no more on solar system's beach, and solar system, speck of dust held fast in universe's reach. An universe so grand and great, itself a grain no more, but just a speck once sparked by heart on beach of thought, by sea of life, all grains of truth which lay upon God's shore. And that's my romantic approach, if you will, but it sort of filled the gap for me. And Clint, I know you don't like poets, but I had to share.
Wait.
It's Plato that didn't like poets. It's Plato that didn't like poets and musicians, and we've done a whole series on that.
Incidentally, Jan, last afterthought on this. You were talking, Clint. You made reference to the logic of math earlier, and in my one of the first concepts that affected me was that of. It wasn't Socrates, but basically we're talking about. Oh my God! I can do this, guys, with the time allotted. It's a syllogism. Whoever it was that created syllogism, a major premise and a minor.
I think
premise.
That wasn't that Socrates. Now you're going to make me look that up, but that may have been Socrates.
No. It's somebody very, very common, but also ancient. But a major premise.
Plato, Aristotle, etc.
Aristotle, thank you. It was a major premise and a minor premise from which the conclusion must follow. Between trivium and etymology, regardless of terms. Incidentally, there's one small conundrum here in our state where if you're comparing surveys and they differ, the oldest survey wins. As far as land survey, and it seems to me that the organic instruments that we have the right or access to, regardless of the respect by current political administrations, and that probably lends itself towards our personal truths, because quite frankly, the ability to prevail with our personal truths as we hold them dear and personal and conceptual. Is still valid, regardless of, you know, what is it about gold? He who has the gold makes the rules.
Right.
That's my rant, guys, and I'm so grateful to you both.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dan. And we've still got some more callers waiting on the line, so we're going to go to the next call. Thank you so much. All right. Let's go to Fred in Iowa. How you doing tonight, Fred?
I thought I'd never get on. Bless your heart. I got statements to make and then a question to ask. Okay. I haven't had a chance yet to study the trivium, the quad trivium, and the classical trivium. But Lark said, and I think you said, that instinctually or intuitively, I know the classical trivium. Okay, my take on the trivium right now...
No, that would be the trivium method. The classical trivium is flipped upside down and primarily used to fool people.
Right, right. And because of the classical trivium, sophistry, word manipulation, or wordsmithing, and this is happening tonight. Okay, I have learned the trivium because I want to be proficient in apologetics, and that is defense of the Bible. Now, to the next thing, to destroy, this is my word, to destroy...
Let me just interject. The trivium method is for defining the truth. It's not for being an apologetic. It's for, you know, being consistent with reality no matter what you find. So you shouldn't approach the trivium with a preconceived agenda. You need to approach the trivium method as being consistent with reality no matter what. But if you approach it with an agenda, I'm going to use it so that I can, preach the literal interpretation of the Bible or whatever, you need to be careful of that because that's not what it's for. That would be the classical trivium, which is used for mind control and manipulation.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and for that reason is why I have to understand the trivium, because it's going to be used against me. Okay.
It is every day, right, yes.
Now go to the next thing. This is my words. To destroy truth will set up a world where only the strong or psychopath will be in control. Okay, the next thing. Bible. I believe Bible is the truth. And I make this statement. Prophecy proves the truth of the Bible. Now, there's many things that can prove it, but 95% of prophecy has happened. Only the 5% should happen. Okay, now, defining of terms, and I don't want to go into a discussion about 9/11, but I could ask this question just to explain definition of terms. Okay, term. Would we all agree, or can we agree, on the term? Three buildings were destroyed. Could we agree on that if we were going on to a discussion about 9/11?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay.
The two towers.
I don't want to go on about 9/11, but through sophistry, manipulation, wordsmithing, we could have come up with all kinds of examples, the reason why and all this. But the truth, or in divining terms, three buildings were destroyed. Now, going back to Bible prophecy, that is the same terms that I would use, that prophecy proves the truth of the Bible. Now,
see, here's one issue, though, when you think of it in terms of prophecy. 9/11 was a historical event. We can study it, etc., where the Bible, while we can study it as a book, that's one thing, but again, there are no contradictions in nature.
I agree with that.
Okay, then let me add something to that. So there are no contradictions in nature. So in nature, we can see tree, bird, sun, cloud, earth, whatever you want out there, but in nature, we don't see book. So book is then a form of art by the arm of man. Now, man can write a book to be, to live life
in harmony.
Live in harmony with reality and with truth, consistency with reality, which is basically what the trivium method is. But we have to be careful calling art nature, because there are no contradictions in nature. If you walk into a library, every book in that library is going to be written by man. If you find one that's written by God, well, that's a contradiction. There are no contradictions in nature, so we have to be careful with that approach. You know, so this is why the Trivium Method is important.
Excellent, yeah, excellent point. And I will go along with it, but I will come up with something about myself. A word that I hated for years was faith. I hated the word faith because that word faith meant dumb people, little blue-haired ladies that went to church and frustrated old men. So, going on in a book, and it says in the book that the prophets were inspired by God. Okay? Now, people could say that's a book, whether you believe it or not. But prophecy, getting down to the simplest, I would say, truth or fact of the book, is 95% of prophecy is provable. And I get your point, Jan, and man, I really like you, buddy. But anyhow, I ain't going to take up any more time. I'm done. Have a good evening. Great show.
You too,
bye.
Fred.
Jan, let me read from Webster's. The dictionary I respect the most is Webster's 1828. Where it defines reality and truth. Reality, actual being or existence of anything. It also refers to truth or fact in distinction from mere appearance. An appearance is, of course, what you do when you go to court and appear in person or in the name of the state. All right, something intrinsically important, not merely a matter of show, is reality. In law, it is immobility or the fixed permanent nature of property as chattels which savor of the reality, etc. So, all right, also, that may exist of itself. Now, let's go to the word truth in Webster's 1828. Now remember, the first definition is actual being or existence of anything. There is no words that I can use or say to invoke the non-existence of reality. It's just not possible. It is the actual being or existence of a thing. Truth is defined as conformity to fact or reality. Exact accordance with that which is or has been, shall be, etc.
And you know, just to interrupt real quick, Clinton, now I, you know, reading that first definition, I've got the 1828 open in front of me as well. But that line, exact accordance with that which is or has been or shall be, is discussed in the original Trivium series, I believe, with Gino Denning.
Yeah, and so you have to distinguish the two words from each other. Not that they have to be different, but the problem is one, in my humble opinion, is
conformity of the other. Got it.
Right. Truth can be twisted into all different matters, and depending on your
truth cannot be. A lie can be twisted in all different matters, but
a lie can be truth. That's
well, no, a lie can be called truth, but it's still a lie. That's the issue.
Well, no, that's where the word confirmation comes into play. And that's the important part about all of the way we live, is that we are in a state of confirmation of the lie. We live the lie. Our names are a lie. Or we live in a number. We do all these things that are lies. But to us, that's our truth. That is how we operate in this system. It's not reality. It's identification. But
if we start calling a lie truth, it's like Webster's further down, number seven. It's and number six, fidelity, consistency. The thoughts of the past of past pleasure and truth, and then seven, honesty and virtue. All right. So I mean, honesty and virtue are not taking a lie and calling it truth, or ruling it truth, or having a consensus about truth. You know, it's renaming a lie truth and then saying that it is true, even if it's a lie.
Well, here's let's go further. Truth is the real fact of just principle.
What number is that?
That's number nine. A principle is something created by us, not God or nature or whatever. So real fact of just principle. That's not reality. That is a principle that was created, such as a law or other form of learning tool. So you see the difference between what the principle that I come up with or the truth I come up with to explain reality does not make my truth reality. That's the
right. Look down at number 13. In truth, in reality, in fact, of a truth, in reality, certainly. To do truth, to practice what God commands, John 3, which is obviously a biblical reference, but the, you know, so it's, again, you know, going back to consistency with reality, because as soon as you step away, I mean, you know, that's what I keep saying, even if we're calling lies truth and consensus truth, etc., it doesn't mean that it is truth in reality, truth, you know, it's consistent with reality. But again, like you pointed out, and to see this point to you, conformity to fact or reality. But again, it's got to be conformity to fact or reality.
Exactly. It is a fact, Jan, that you are my slave. Now put on your chains, get your ass over here, and clean my damn house.
Well, that ain't a fact, buddy.
Oh, you're but it's the truth. I just made it the truth. What do you mean it's not a Wait a minute.
Well, that's not consistent with reality, buddy. So.
Oh, so there's the difference.
Right.
It's my truth.
So
I mean, I'm picturing you with a big feather boa right now.
I don't want to know what you're picturing.
Man, I can't wait. My house is a mess.
Yeah. I'm going to have nightmares. So we'll take Dave after we get back from this break. Got my ears blasted. All right, so we got one caller left and about 3 or 4 minutes left. Is Dave still on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Dave. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being so patient there.
No problems. I wasn't waiting very long anyways. I just kind of wanted to get back to what you were trying to get out earlier in the show, which is the... I guess the corruption of the truth movement, and I guess the conversation kind of devolved or
boy, did it
went in another direction. But I think it kind of plays into what you guys are splitting.
It's not the reality
right now.
Movement. It's not the reality movement. Well, it's the truth movement.
Right. So what I'm trying to get at is. A lot of the stuff that, let's see, okay, for instance, if we talk about mathematics, we can come to some solutions with some certitude. For instance, 1 plus 1 is 2, 1 plus 1 plus 1 is 3, and that's something that's universally understood, and that's something that has been universally understood and probably will be in the future.
Well, let me ask you a question about that, because I always have a trouble with things that are so-called universally understood. What if that one is one dozen?
Well, I mean, that's the same thing, because if you consider a dozen a single unit, then you say three units of a dozen is still three. So there are three beings or three substances which you call a dozen. So one dozen plus one dozen plus one dozen is three units of a dozen. So that's a universal fact. That's unchangeable. But anyways, what I'm trying to get at is there's a difference between mathematics and other sciences, maybe even the physics, and what's called the truth movement, because the subject matter in the truth movement is highly subject to interpretation.
Well, let me interject at this point, David. And speaking of David's, I recommend going to the Gnostic Media website under Trivium Studies and listen to the series I did with David Harriman on physics and quantum physics. And quantum physics essentially, you know, is established off of false axioms and off of contradictions. Instead of asking who, what, where, when, and then determining why, and then explaining how, the quantum physics, for instance, they see a contradiction, they throw up their hands and say, well, you know, we can't figure it out, instead of digging deeper and looking for the answer further. Oh, well, you know, it's a contradiction. We just can't know anything. And so I think, personally, that, you know, quantum physics and the modern field of physics since Einstein is one of the worst infected. And, yeah, I mean, Einstein was a major fraud, and I mentioned John Bjerknes' book last night, I believe, The Manufacture and Sale of St. Einstein. But this stuff is, all of this irrationality and Kantian stuff is throughout physics, and it has infected mathematics and juxtaposition. And, you know, and then they use that, like Amit Goswami and these guys are used as leaders of the spiritual truth movement. And they're out there, you know, promoted as part of this new age truth agenda. Uh-oh, and that was the, and did you have anything you wanted to add real quick, Clint?
Thank you, Jan, for being part of the lineup here. It's good to have an ally amongst some strangeness that's going on here. So I just want to say welcome again, and thanks for doing what you do.
And thanks for coming on tonight, Clint. Thanks for Dave, for your call, Dave, and thanks to all of the callers. It was a busy night, and thanks for making it go by so quickly. Have a good night, everyone.